The following program may contain language. Discretion is advised.
Can you tell me a little something? Can you make it extraordinary? Can anybody out there tell me what it means?
Well, we only talk about the media machine.
Bring me everything that you got, and I'll be everything that I need. Can't believe that we got through this. Now I guess we're looking back on it.
Welcome back, everybody, to another episode of Looking Back on It. You're here with the Grandmaster himself, Eric Reed, the number one sad boy on the internet. And I'm here today with two of my bandmates from New Age Outlaws. I don't think I've ever talked about this band on any of my podcasts, actually. We kind of run an Every Time I Die-esque, I guess you could say, kind of band.
I mean, you could definitely say that. That's a generous description.
Absolutely.
Yeah, we're like the Walmart brand of Every Time I Die.
Oh man! But I am here with Matt Hamilton. What's going on?
Yo, not much, man. How are you doing?
Not bad, not bad. Just chilling. We're downtown right now. Oh, sorry, and also here with Derek Geraldo. Sorry, my intro Hello. Skills are not great today.
Hello.
Hello. longtime friends of mine. We all kind of grew up playing the same kind of music, I would assume. Like a lot of metal, a lot of emo, a lot of punk.
I grew up playing Depeche Mode. I don't know what you're talking about
it's
here.
It's basically just Beatles covers for me.
That's right.
My dad needed to step in.
I don't actually know how to play an instrument. I don't remember the guy's name from that band, but I just tried to
Isn't
dance
his name
like
Personal
him.
Jesus, or is that just a song?
Your own personal. I just wanted to dance like him because I saw him live one time, and like all ladies, like as soon as he just started shaking his hips, all the ladies started screaming, and I was like, "That's it.
That's the way. That's what I want for my life.
That's the way." Yeah.
Matty doesn't actually play the guitar. He's really up there dancing. That's what he wanted to do. He's
that's right.
There's actually a backing track, and he's just dancing with it. He looks like that guy from School of Rock.
The guitar's a prop.
Yeah.
That's exactly. Right. Yeah. They all think I'm playing, but it's just a very, very advanced technology that nobody else knows about.
Fair enough. Yeah. Derek is the lead singer in a band that we have together also called The Shivvies. And pretty much the entire, he is The Shivvies. I'm just kind of there for the ride. But, we also all have a band together called New Age Outlaws where we play more metal, stuff like that. And Derek is also lead singer of that band.
Yeah.
Where he screams his heart out and sounds like he's dying on the floor. And,
well, literally too. I remember like the show that we played in Hamilton that one time for the last song. I was just like, I just really wanted to do something weird. And like, I remember this, like the stage was super small. So I kind of just laid down near the steps at the front of the stage and just did the last song lying down screaming.
Just sitting down.
And there's some pretty cool photos from it, actually. I had a friend take some Polaroids and stuff that I still have that I should share with you folks because I don't think I've ever shown you guys that.
Yeah, this is news to me.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. There's some pretty good stuff there. But
fucking right.
Yeah, we... it kind of started with you and me, Matty, and, you know, Allie, who plays drums, like, you know, we started this way back in, like, I think it was, like, 2015.
Something like that,
right?
Yeah.
And it kind of just started off as, like, a fun thing to do every week, and then, you know, we kind of broke off for a couple years, brought it back, and then brought Eric in, and...
Yeah, we had some, we all got busy with our lives as it can happen with bands like that, that are, you know, everybody's side project, and then... I think we were kind of like sort of shuffling some members out too and just lost a little bit of momentum there because we were like, where do we go next? You know, we had some core members that for one reason or the other had to leave. And yeah, then that's when we got this guy, Eric, here and came in and he was a breath of fresh air and like actually was stoked to be a part of the project. And that's kind of really all you need in bands. You just want people to be stoked on what you're doing, right? But... Yeah, then we just started kind of finally writing songs that I think like were formed a certain sound and were that iteration of the band that was like probably what, like 4 or 5 years later.
Definitely.
After the inception of it.
And not to mention all the countless hours recording in my studio upstairs, which we're not in right now. We're actually downtown in Matt's place. But but normally we are in the studio. But yeah, all the hours we spent recording between all of us, and you know, it was just insane. So maybe you know what? Maybe we throw up Russo when this episode goes up. So the link will be Russo in the description at some point in time, I would assume.
Cool.
Hopefully. I mean, it's my job to do that, so I'm giving you the guarantee that it should be in there.
It's on you.
It's tight. Yeah, no, Russo is a fun one. That was like the first one
that
we really resonated. Like that's one of the songs that we started with, I think, from the beginning.
Yes.
It was one of the newer songs from the beginning that we started, but then we carried that one over into kind of like our second take of this band. And I think it's such a good, like, even like the intro riff and everything like that, it's a good way to just like get the momentum going for us. Like, like every time we go in to like jam and rehearse, I always love starting off with that song because I think it really starts up that momentum to carry through for the rest of the set. So yeah, I hope you enjoy it.
It's definitely an Every Time I Die ish.
Yeah, yeah,
track.
Of course, yeah.
I remember when we wrote it, it was kind of wild, and we were like, just how far can we push like some of the riffs and how much they depart from sort of the structure that was starting to form. And like, and then we just, especially with some of those, like those breaks with the drums and stuff, we were just like, all right, fuck it. Like, let's do that. You know, let's get a little bit silly with this. And that part was fun. I remember writing that part, but yeah, no, it's crazy. Every time we play it, I'm just like, here we go. How old is this song now? It's crazy. I think it's probably like 3 or 4 years. Yeah. What, three or four years
old?
Yeah.
It's like our oldest child now that, like, you know, like it's like going to school on their own, and you're just like, oh my God, when did you get so big? It's like,
right.
You
get so
big, I remember when you were just a little wee baby and I could hold you in my arms. Right. I mean, the funny thing about it is the lyrics, which, you know, anybody who like is going to listen is going to laugh. It's about someone who was on Big Brother. That's the lyrics.
Really?
Yeah, she was a poker player. And because I was like obsessed with Big Brother at the time. And then like, I hated her so much, how like snaky she was in that show. Even though like it made for the drama of the show, because like that's what makes it interesting. She was so good at playing the game. But I just hated how snaky she was. So I was like, I'm going to write a song about it.
Well, and here's the thing. Me and Allie always, like our drummer Allie, always make fun of it because we always think it's Vince Russo from WWE. So we're always like, well, nobody really likes him either. So, you know, like,
I lied. That's exactly what it's
about. I was going to say, appeal to the SNME audience. Yeah. Come on, Derek.
Yes.
Pander.
Yes.
Pander
exactly.
A little bit.
No. Yeah. To your SNME, you know, fans out there, that's exactly why I wrote it. It was Vince Russo?
Vince Russo.
Yeah. Fucking hate that guy.
Yeah. Fuck that guy. I didn't even, all of this that we're talking about right now, I didn't know any of this until now.
Mm-hmm. I think we talked about it once at a band practice, but you were definitely on your phone.
Oh, for sure. You know, I was probably on a dating app.
Yeah. It's kind of funny because if I told you the backstory to a lot of these songs, they're not like as, you know, maybe poetic or prolific that you might think. It's literally like the dumbest things that come to mind when I do that.
But isn't that the beauty of it? Is it like, but there's all this mystery when you see the word and you hear the screaming vocals and stuff and you feel the like the emotion of it, and then when you like kind of break down what it actually is, it's like,
it's about me like eating a Big Mac. You know, like.
I was having a rough day and I was thinking about Big Macs.
Or the Big Mac was like, you know, it just fell out the side and you're like fucking pissed about it, you know?
Yeah, you know, lyric writing is something that's very it's very interesting because, you know, and Eric was kind of talking about it before, but like I used to, like there's other bands that I've been in, like I do instruments and the vocals and stuff. So when I write, sometimes when I write lyrics first and then write the music to it, or, you know, vice versa. But in this band, right, it's always like you guys come up with the riffs and then I kind of find the material after the fact. Like I remember when you showed me Crusher, which is another song that we have, those lyrics kind of came to me almost automatically, and I could find a situation in my life that I could just write about to kind of fit that song very, very well. So really what it comes down to, and I mean, this is kind of the fun part about being in this band too, is that there is, I don't know, like when I hear the music that you create, the instrumental parts, it's just really easy for me to find some kind of concept that helps me write to it. So it's a lot of fun. But yeah, one day we'll sit down, we'll go through the track list, and I'll tell you what each song's about.
All right, man.
Maybe we'll have
but
you guys.
It's not serious.
Maybe we'll have you guys on again, and we'll just talk about our album instead.
That's a good idea.
We'll do a review of our album when it's done.
I was gonna say, like, you know, with everything with New Age Outlaws, it's actually a really great segue, because a big influence I had in writing some of the songs for New Age Outlaws came from music from Every Time I Die and really listening to this album, which we're going to talk about today.
It's honestly, it was kind of the reason why I mentioned this album to you guys, because at the time, I think I joined you guys in 2016 or 2017, one or the other, but it was right around the time of this album coming out, and it got me back into Every Time I Die. Like, I was kind of on the fence after probably like Gutter Phenomenon. So, like, that was, in my opinion, the last, like, best album they had, like, where it was, like, every song was great. I didn't skip any songs. Like, you know, I have a very small list on what I like to call on the show platinum albums.
Okay.
So, platinum means there are zero skips. It is, like, an album I can listen to. It doesn't matter how long it's been, it's every song is amazing. And I have a very short list. I've already done one of them. My first episode, System of a Down Toxicity.
Okay.
That album is by far a platinum album, in my opinion. Not a lot of people see it that way, but that's okay. I'm okay with
that. I'd say their self-titled is that for me.
See, that's what I'm saying. So that's kind of was the discussion I was having with Matt Roberts when we did that episode.
Okay.
He said the same thing, but you guys are around the same age. You guys are a little bit older than me.
Yeah, we're a bunch of old fucks.
Well, not that. I mean, you're only 5 years old.
Pushing 40, bro. Pushing 40.
Seeing some grays come in, buddy.
Oh, I know. Oh,
no.
You should see my pubes.
Oh, man. Yeah. But
they're just straight up falling out at this point.
I thought you went bald, baby. I thought you. You
know, oh, now I am
Brazilian.
Now I'm just like, now I want them back. I'm like, no, what's happening? Alopecia of the what?
Just grows like weeds. You get you hack them off, and they grow right back.
That's right, yeah. But then you get old, and like suddenly when it all falls out, you're like, wait a minute, this is not good. Why is this happening? No, I'm kidding. It's a problem.
So they start gluing it back on.
That's it. Yeah, exactly. Makes matters a little more complicated
It's a permanent solution.
Yeah, I use strawberry flavored glue, just for everybody.
For her. A glue flavor. Yeah.
For her
or him.
It's all for you, baby. Or him.
For anyone.
Yeah. Really. If it's Valentine's Day, maybe orange or mango, but otherwise it's strawberry.
Get tropical with it.
That's right. Yeah. No. wait, I forgot what we were talking about.
Yeah, we've completely veered off track. Yeah. So
I'm sorry.
So let's not talk about pubes. Let's talk about Low Teens by Every Time I Die, what we came here to talk about. And I just want to do a little brief history before we get into it. Low Teens is the 8th studio album by American metalcore band Every Time I Die, in case nobody knows it. Produced by my favorite producer in the metal game, Will Putney. I don't know if you guys know who that is.
Has he done?
He's done You're Not You Anymore by Counterparts. He's done Knocked Loose, both their albums, A Different Shade of Blue and Counting Worms, I think is the first one. I think that's what's called. Plus, like, also a bunch. He's a guitar player for Fit for an Autopsy. They're like a really cool heavy metal band. And it was released in September of 2016 on Epitaph Records. The album was considered a huge success, reaching number 2 in the Billboard's independent albums and number 1 in the Billboard's vinyl albums. So the top 100, it didn't do as well. It was like 52. But that's still not bad for an independent album. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Because this was all, from what I'm gathering, it was pretty much funded by them anyways, right? They didn't have, like, Epitaph doesn't necessarily have bands signed to them anymore, right?
They don't?
They're just kind of distribution as far as I know.
Oh, okay.
And they have been like that for a little bit. They do have certain bands that they have signed, but...
Oh, how the mighty have fallen.
I know, eh?
Jeez.
But it's more like Homegrown Records. Remember those guys who used to do like Early November and Midtown and like bands like that?
Yeah.
It's kind of like the same idea, right? But the whole album had even great critical success with extremely favorable reviews from AP, Exclaim, and Metacritic. All of them giving them like 8.5 and higher. That's pretty good for like AP, because AP can tend to like rip your album apart, right? Especially if it's a metalcore album.
Yeah.
They're more like, they kind of lean towards more the pop punk side and stuff like that.
Okay.
But this album is undoubtedly one of their best albums, in my opinion. Kind of will always have a special place in my heart, as I mentioned earlier, only because I was kind of out on Every Time I Die, and then this album came back, and I'm like, I'm back in, baby, let's go. Because this whole album kind of had that classic Every Time I Die sound mixed with like more of a, I wouldn't say experimental, but more of like their, like, because now they're going more like the rock direction in this album, where it's like more a lot more driving vocals, a little bit more clean singing and stuff like that.
Like blue keys, like
and definitely very experimental riffs, but still having that like cool, like, well, I mean, I'll get into it in the next segment, but like, it's definitely just like very experimental in terms of like having new stuff mixed with the old stuff. Like it has a good mix of everything, I think. And, definitely a fantastic album.
Yeah, no, I absolutely agree. Like, you know, when I was listening to it again last night, I realized again, like why it is my favorite record from Every Time I Die. Because, you know, the craftsmanship that was like for each and every song is so great. And, like masterful in a way, like every song is so like tightly written. And, you know, when you match the instrumentals compared with the chilling yet poetic lyrics, you know, delivered by Keith Buckley, it's just like, it just makes for such an amazing hardcore record. Like, you know, beautiful, but also tragic in a way, because when you, and we can get into this, but when you delve into like the topics that are talked about in every song, you know, it kind of goes towards, I would say, the darker side of the spectrum of emotion in humanity. But, you know, just really masters at their craft in this song, and they really show up pretty well. And I do want to give a shout out. The one thing that really does stand out for me the most going through this album again was the drums and all the different tracks. Yeah. And that was done by Daniel Davison, who I think had the shortest tenure as a drummer within the Every Time I Die career.
It was only this album that he was on. That was one of my interesting facts. It's literally the only album he was ever on, and then they switched back to their old drummer. He actually came back.
Gotcha.
Their original drummer, yeah.
When you listen to the album, you hear so much going on with the drums, and it's adding so many accents and notes, and a really... for me, at least, I found that the drums were so noticeable in the way that they were being played. Like, the accents and everything just really helped move along and drive every tune, and it was super unique, so, you know... Shout out to Daniel Davison and being a part of Low Teens, because I think he really helped with that album.
Absolutely.
Sure. Yeah. I actually, that album, funny enough, at first for me, did not click.
Really?
Yeah. I listened to it and I don't know what happened. I think I listened to the first few tracks and I was like, what the fuck is this?
Don't you have a The Coin Has a Say?
I do.
Poster on your wall. I'm looking right at it.
So, okay. So,
that
so,
album did not click.
When I heard that track, I was like, oh, fuck. I was like, yeah, this, I love that track. But like, I'm talking like when I like started the album, because when I like listen to an album, I'm old school. I listen to it from the top, right? Yeah. Go through it the way that I don't know, I guess the band intended, right? Or whatever. But I immediately, I like straight out of the gate, when I listened to it, I was like, huh? And I think I don't know. It just, there was something about it that I found hard to like vibe with at first. And so I put it away for years, like fucking years. And but then like, I think like what you said, like later on, I think when I sat down and maybe I was just, you know, a little bit more mature in my like listening habits later on, and I gave that album a listen, I was just, and it clicked. I was like, oh, okay, this is what this is. It's there's a lot more to it. The riffs are, and the songwriting is a lot more densely packed than in some of the previous albums, right? But the other thing is, I think the other thing too that maybe didn't really like jive with me at first is that it's so dark. It's so dark compared to their other stuff, which is like, I don't want to say like fun and playful, because like it, like say stuff off Last Night in Town and Hot Damn is also like pretty fucking dark.
I was going to say, a song like Logic of the Crocodiles is not a happy-go-lucky song.
No, that's not, yeah.
But there or a Bolerama.
Yeah, yeah.
Well, but you know, I do feel like, you know, in the top, like even in the hardcore genre, right, you're almost kind of set up to like speak about certain topics, right? Like you're not always going to go with that like happy sunshine approach to, you know, the type of music that's being driven, because there's a contrast, right?
For sure.
But with that said, I do kind of see what you're saying, because with Low Teens, it is very like, again, it's that darker side of like human emotion. You really are going into a hole with this one, right?
You are.
Isn't necessarily just like a, it's not like just like you're talking about the dark. You're really like getting into it.
Yeah.
You do get into it with this album.
I think like in some of their previous albums and like kind of their initial, like, I guess like sort of, band image was playful, even though they will talk about the dark stuff, is really playful and wacky and wild. Like, you know, everybody knows like the New Black, and, you know, and the music video is like kind of based off Boogie Nights, and it's fun and it's funny. You watch it and, you know, like, and just when you think like everybody's looking at the guy's dick, you know, it's revealed he's just like, you know, he's like, what was it? He was working on a, like, it was a Rubik's Cube.
Yeah, it was a Rubik's Cube.
Like, and yeah. And he's like celebrating everybody, and it's hilarious. Right. Yeah. And that's like the Every Time I Die that like I grew up loving. Cause I like, yeah. I love just how irreverent that like sense of humor was. But I feel like in low teens, they just, it's all stripped away, well, you know, and they're just like, because you listen to like Map Change and you're like, there's nothing, they're not trying to inject, Keith is not trying to inject any humor into that.
No,
absolutely not. No.
It's really dark, which in a way it's beautiful, because I think like, and I hate to say this, but like Map Change is one of my favorite songs now by Every Time I Die. I almost don't want to like admit that that's true, because I kind of want to say that it's the funner stuff. But Map Change is like, and I think a lot of people probably feel that same way, you know, if you've seen them live in the last few years.
Yeah.
But that music video, holy fuck, man. Like, is that ever like a real, like a beautiful gut punch? Like, you know, yeah. Like this is Buffalo and all of its fuck. And all of its like fucking like in like really like raw flavors, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, that song is definitely their most streamed song on Spotify. So you're probably not the only one who thinks that, for sure.
Yeah.
I've contributed to those numbers.
Yeah, exactly. And yeah, I agree that video is amazing. But let's get into the meat and potatoes of the whole thing.
Okay,
sounds good.
And let's roll into our first segment, which is Riff City. So Riff City this week, I guess. I always say this month or this week. I get confused because I do one podcast where I do it once a month, and this one's bi-weekly. But this week for Riff City, my choice was Just As Real But Not As Brightly Lit. The second riff on it, it's like that. How do I explain it? I guess we were kind of talking about it earlier. This song already, right off the bat, is like unbelievable. Has like amazing energy right off the top. But then it goes into, I guess, the pre-chorus or chorus riff, I guess you could say. It's like that second riff that comes in. It's that bouncy, like pentatonic thing they do, like on guitar, like dun 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 dun. Essentially, like our song Dimebag. It's like the same thing. Okay. Like, you know what I mean? Okay. Like where they're just straight up, he's just rocking that pentatonic scale, and then adding in, of course, the 6-3 on the D string, or I guess A string in their case. But not to mention the little drum flourishes and squeals at like the second half of the riff, because like it kind of does like the bouncy part, and then it stops in like a halftime thing where it's like dun dun wheel, dun, dun. You know what I mean? So, but it's just super high energy and like super catchy. It's a no-brainer, honestly, in my opinion, because that's like classic Every Time I Die,
for sure.
And like as soon as I heard it, I was on the Zamboni at work, and I'm driving, I heard it, I'm like, that's it. That's my pick right there. I got off my flood, and I was like, before I'm shoveling, I'm typing it in. Everyone was like, come on, man, I got to go. I'm like, yeah, 1 second.
there's something within Every Time I Die tracks, right? Where like they do incorporate that kind of bluesy Southern rock pentatonic feel to it. And when it's just like with that heavy kind of hardcore vibe to it, you just can't help but like, you know, bang your head, right? And just like really get into the groove, really get into the vibe of it. So, yeah. You know, totally agree with you on that one.
And it's so funny how like a band that is like just feels like they're harnessing, so that they're channeling that Southern vibe so deeply.
Yeah.
Is from Buffalo.
I know. They even kind of look Southern.
Yeah, like what? How? Yeah.
Dude, have you ever been to Buffalo? It's it's like the most saddest city sometimes. I mean, like the best city, right? But like so quiet and dismal and stuff. Like it doesn't surprise me that kind of music would come out of a city like that. It kind of just makes sense.
For sure. I remember long time ago, I think I was, I might have been like, we might, I think my family might have been like taking a vacation down south, and we drove through Buffalo. And the drive through Buffalo, like if you're just passing through via the interstate, is pretty interesting, because like you cross the border and then you're like driving through the like downtown core, and you go up this like kind of you go up on this sort of ramp thing, and you twist around And you pass the, I think is the Sabres stadium or their
HSBC arena.
Yeah, there you go. Arena. Yeah. Where they play. And I just remember after that, like, it's almost like you're like a little bit like on a precipice looking down at this big expanse of like the Buffalo suburbs. And there was like, it was just like, it was foreclosed houses as far as the eye can see.
Yeah.
It was so fucked. It was like somebody dropped a, like, just a bomb on the place.
To be fair, it's right outside Niagara Falls, New York, and Niagara Falls, like Twin Cities. It's not a great place either. Niagara Falls is a lot of foreclosed homes, unfortunately. They got hit really hard in 2008 with the recession, never really just bounced back at all. Because it's not a tourist place in the States like it is over here.
Right.
Like here, I mean, Niagara Falls, Canada is not much better, but like, at least Niagara Falls, Canada has like a pretty good tourist market. You get people all from around the world to see it. We got the best view of the falls. So, you know.
Yeah. Like, you know. Yeah. I guess that's all it is. We got the best view of the falls.
That's pretty much what
Clifton
it is.
Clifton Hill and Lundy's Lane. And
but they got stuff too. Like they got Seneca Casino and stuff like that. And, but it's just, the problem is like right over the border. It's not great there. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Well,
yeah.
You know, like what I was going to say, like, you know, as Canadians, like living in Toronto and stuff, Buffalo was always that place where like you went to go see shows that were just never making it into Canada. Right. Yeah. So like if there were like some North American tour, but it was mostly like United States based, like, you know, we would drive down to Buffalo to go catch a show. So, you know, shout outs to Buffalo. Buffalo been many, many times to catch different shows or even just like passing through and stuff when I was driving down south. So, love Anchor Bar and go Bills.
Yeah.
Go Bills. Dude. I should have worn my Bills Nation shirt today.
I'm so pissed that I missed the last TID the season, man. Like after they literally made the announcement like what, a few days later?
Something like that. Yeah.
That sucks.
I was able to see him that year, but I saw him at Warped Tour when they came here. So it was at the flats at Budweiser stage or whatever, you know, that weird spot in between Echo Beach and the amphitheater or whatever.
Yeah.
But it was a very, that was pretty much most of the songs they played were all off of Low Teens. The entire, okay. because it was like their first time back in Toronto. They still hit like on a couple like classics or whatever, but for the most part, it was all Low Teens. It was 2018. So they were kind of fresh off it, I guess, like, I guess 2 years in, but they had just finished their tour with Counterparts, I want to say.
I think they toured with Counterparts.
I think it was for this album.
For this album.
Yeah. I think it was Counterparts and like Amity Affliction or something like that. And Counterparts weren't on the bill, but Amity Affliction was for Warped Tour. So like they were sharing the same stage. So it was actually wild, man. I somehow got like front row on that. I just happened to show up like right before they were starting, and I'm like, I'm just gonna stand here. And then it was like, oh, this is every time I die there. I didn't even look at the schedule. It just worked out perfectly.
Yeah. Amazing.
And I ran into. Because Andy Williams is a wrestler. I know you guys know that, right? But who wrestles in AEW as the Butcher for everybody. So he's their lead guitar player. And he had a bunch of wrestlers that I didn't really know, but I'd kind of seen at shows at that actual show. And they were all his buddies from like Buffalo.
Cool.
So some guy bumped into me. I looked by me. I'm like, is that Kevin Blackwood? Like, I've seen that guy. Wow, I was watching this guy wrestle like last week at Smash. Right? Like, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
He's like, hey man, how's it going? I'm like, hey, Blackwood. He's like, yeah. And I'm like, what's up, brother? You know, so like it was very cool because I forgot that they can get like a certain amount of people to go backstage, right? Like, or side stage. Kevin Blackwood and like, I think it was not Garcia, but it was like someone like that, like someone who's in AEW now, who's like a bigger name, was like going backstage with them too. And I was like, oh, that's fucking wild. you know what I mean?
I think the wildest, sorry, go ahead.
Yeah.
No.
I was just saying, I think the wildest shit that I've ever seen, like as a like backstage, let me start that over. I think that one of the wildest like sightings of like a backstage personality I've ever seen at a metal show, and I wasn't there, I just saw it on Google, I think, was Will Smith and Jada Pinkett Smith, because like she was in like, what was it, Wicked Wisdom?
Her metal band
at the time, and they were on like, they were on tour, I think they were on a festival, it was like Ozfest or something. And it was Will Smith backstage watching Killswitch Engage while Howard Jones was in it. Yeah, yeah. I was like, wow, what the fuck? Yeah.
He's like, yeah, man, my favorite song's Rose of Sharon.
You can't make that up.
Yeah.
Can you imagine?
Check out my Rose of Sharon tattoo. Yeah. He's got like one on his neck. What the fuck?
Can you imagine if you're at a metal show and out of nowhere you see Will Smith? Like,
oh, man. All right. What was your pick, Maddie? I'm interested to see what your pick was, because I would think out of the three of us, you're probably the biggest Every Time I Die fan, because I don't have Every Time I Die posters on my wall.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, it's a bit of a toss up for me. I'll be honest with you guys. Like, I'm torn, because it's like it's a choice between a deep cut or like two like very well known tracks, you know. And I almost feel like if I go with the very well known track, it's like then it's obvious, and you know, and I don't need to explain it, and it's not gonna add anything.
Okay.
So I'm gonna go with the deep cut.
But I will.
But I will.
There you go. Yeah, exactly. So I'm gonna go with something that's gonna make Derek like fucking roll his eyes at me. I'm gonna go with It Remembers. And the reason being, and I know what you're gonna say.
Are you talking about that intro riff, the whatever?
Yeah. Okay. Which sounds a lot like the intro to the album that originally I originally at first did not jive with.
Yeah.
But I think that, like, just for me, as a guitar player and as a music fan, I never really like. Obviously, I didn't grow up in the South. I don't know. Like, I wouldn't be able to tell.
Wouldn't have guessed.
South Mississauga.
I was actually in the North Mississauga, to make matters even funnier. That place is nothing like, Arkansas.
Like El Paso.
Oh, my God. Like that's really deep South. But
I got to watch your words, sir. I grew up in PC.
You grew up in PC? Yeah. Oh, my God. Yeah. That's gross.
Poor credit, homie.
That's gross. You guys had, what? You, that's
you,
gross.
Applewood?
We hated you, like, overprivileged kids in the North in Meadowvale.
Yeah. Yeah. Dude, I thought you guys were the overprivileged ones. PC or, like, you had the dirtiest hockey team in the fucking league.
Oh, yeah.
Like, Meadowvale was dirty. Oh, yeah.
That's why we won all the tournaments.
Well, yeah, exactly. See, Meadowvale,
why did you play for Cokesville?
I played for Meadowvale. Ugh. Yeah, and so
the Mohawks.
Meadowvale was the roughest neighborhood. So
you guys need to get on that Central Mississauga tip. I grew up there my whole life, man. Clarkson, baby.
I was driving down there recently, and I was looking around, going, "Like, geez, like I didn't realize just how rough this place actually is."
But what, Central Mississauga?
Yeah. When you're going up here, Ontario, and
that's here, Ontario. Here, Ontario is its own thing.
Right? Yeah, that's fair. Anyway, sorry. Okay, so.
Back to Mississauga Talk.
Welcome back to Mississauga Talk.
It's so easy to just go off the rails. I'm having fun though.
Yeah, no, it's great. Yeah, especially when you're talking about Mississauga. But then again, I probably don't have a whole lot of nice things to say.
So It Remembers is your riff.
Please, Matt, tell us how you really feel.
Ironically titled, given how much I'm fucking going off on a tangent here. So, I don't know what it is, but I have this love of like Southern culture, Southern like just like flavors of like everything, right? Food, and somehow that translated to music. Maybe it's because my dad was like a Steve Earle fan or something, but I just love, and like there's something about like that Southern-y like styling of riff that just really hits me hard. And I don't know where it came from. I grew up listening to like neoclassical Swedish metal and was like all about that when I was like in high school and university. But then suddenly out of nowhere, this love of like Southern stylings just descended. And so when I hear that riff, it just like, I don't know, it like, I feel like I'm listening to something that could almost fit in, say, like a True Detective like fucking episode or something. Like just it really feels Southern, and like when something that truly feels Southern hits me, I'm like and now I'm this big fan of like dark like American gothic like Southern folk, you know, which like sounds kind of like country to some people, but it's like the actual good country where it's not like, you know, the pop stuff. Like it's like people talking about being like, you know, poor and like having a rough life and like abusing drugs and growing up in a rough place, you know, and for a guy that grew up in Mississauga, I have no idea why that stuff resonates so hard with me, but it's cool.
North Mississauga, be truthful. I'm just kidding.
and kind of going back to your point, like, yeah, it does kind of have a similar play to like the first song of that record. But at that point, like, because It Remembers kind of sits in the middle of the album, if I remember correctly.
Yeah, right? Yeah.
So you're kind of getting, like, you're into it at that point. Yeah. And you're right. Like, it does have that, like, Southern vibe to it. Whereas I feel like the one at the beginning is more of this kind of dark-esque kind of intro, like, slowly leading you into the record, right? It doesn't have that, like, pentatonic or Southern feel to it, whereas It Remembers does. So, and you know, suffice to say, I'm it's not that I hate the song, but you know, I'll go into detail about it a little bit.
You can
bit.
Say how
I
you really feel,
have
bro.
My notes around it for sure, but no, it is a solid track and a good riff to pick.
Yeah.
What do you got, Derek? What's your pick for this?
I'm basic too, dude. Like, you know, I have to give it to it. Like, there is one song. It's one of their more popular songs on the record, but for me, it's one. It's the one that you said, you know, has the most plays on you know, on their Spotify, and it's the chorus riff in Map Change. It's so infectious when you listen to it, and you know that played in with, you know, Keith's lyrics, the way that, you know, the way that plays in, and I know, like, when it goes into this kind of like kind of bridgey piece, it's still kind of like playing the rhythm parts of it, the da na 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 na, and like that, even that riff of like the chords that play for that chorus, so good. Like, it's so good. It's so dark, and it's like you said, when you put the video in, you really get this whole atmospheric feeling to it, to that song and the way it plays, and like you know, Jordan's like guitar, the way it's kind of got that verb on it, and he's playing those lead parts in between while he's hitting all the different chords in those pieces, and the lyrics are playing, the stars are aligned, it just connects into this one solid cohesive piece. I remember, you know, I wasn't at the show, I was watching on YouTube, but they used to end their set lists a lot with Map Change.
Yeah.
And maybe it was at a Warped Tour or something like that. But I remember Jordan.
Oh, they definitely did.
Playing that riff. So the song ended. The band walked off the stage. And Jordan was just playing the riff for an extra 5 minutes. And I sat there listening to it for an extra 5 minutes. Because once you're in it, you just get lost into it. And it's kind of this like void. Like, it's spacey, and you kind of just get lost into it. You just want to, like, embrace it for what it is, and it's almost this, like, emptiness in a way of the way it sounds, but it's so infectious, and you just want to live in it and breathe with it. So,
yeah,
if I were to pick, like, the riff, it's definitely that piece in Map Change. I think it's awesome.
Yeah, I find that for me, the first time I heard Map Change, that was literally the song that made me go, oh, fuck, okay, I get it. I'm like, suddenly, like, the rest of the album, okay, this is cool. Like, I've now accepted the rest of this album because of Map Change. And it was like, I remember I wasn't even like sitting there listening to it intently. I was doing something else. I don't remember what the fuck it was, but when that chorus came on, I was like, wait a minute. And it just got in my head, you know? And then when it was over, I was like, it just stayed there. And I guess that's like kind of like the, you know, the classic, you know, when you're talking about what makes a good song, that's like the classic quality of it. Something that like just is infectious like that and stays in your head. Mm-hmm. And that riff, like, I think the word that you're like trying to find is like, it's haunting, you know?
Absolutely.
Yeah. Yeah. It's like every time I hear that, and that was what I thought too. I was like, whoa, it's like, it's got this power to it. And that's why when you like watch that video, you're just like, holy shit. Like, you know, you don't expect that from like a hardcore band to move you that way, but it did, you know? And I think that's probably why, like, you know, a lot of people like it so much, because like it has that, whether or not you're a fan of the band or not. I don't think that, and even my girlfriend at the time, you know, who wasn't really a fan of the band, heard that and was like, holy shit. And we saw that video. And then suddenly now, you know, she's a huge fan of the band. She went to the very last Tid the Season. Yeah. Without me, you know, it's like, what, you know, it was crazy, but that's all that power, all the power of that song, you know?
Yeah. It's amazing. Like, you know, it's very haunting. The whole album is very haunting, I find. And that's what gives it such a powerful, it's an emotional piece, I think. Like, you know, it's kind of like you said, Every Time I Die, known as these, like, you know, kind of humorous type of guys, like, you know, fun pals to be around and stuff. But they really tap into something very interesting here, and it's kind of an emotional piece. And what I love about it, you know, it does all combine. The lyrics, the instruments, the concept, the composition all gathers together to create one giant cohesive piece. But even when you deconstruct it and listen to every piece, it's all bringing something like that to the table that was really, you know, different dimensions of darkness into the emotion. And Map Change really does that. I can listen to that song every time and just pick different pieces that I love. And I do find myself singing it sometimes, right? It's not a happy song, but I find myself singing it because it's so good.
It's great for like a fucking winter day like today.
Yeah,
it's
exactly. Just shit out. Yeah. I'm just looking outside. Gloomy, and all the snow covered shit, as your brother would say.
Low teens equals snow.
Low teens equals snow. And Buffalo gets the worst of it, man.
Oh, yeah. Well, Winnipeg.
Buffa snow.
Yeah, well, that's true. Yeah. But Winnipeg, well, I'm going to be nice right now. I'm not saying anything. But the one last thing I wanted to say, just riffing off of what you were just saying, is I remember like when I first heard, like, kind of like when I first, not when I first heard the song, but like when I saw the video and that song really like started to click for me and started to make sense. I realized that like what you're seeing, what I was seeing, is a band growing up in a way, you know, because it's like, wow, this is now like, this is a very mature song. It's not like overly riffy the way that, you know, some of their songs of the past are, and the way that like that style of music could easily fall into. It's actually very much built around, you know, a little bit more of a simplistic song structure. And it's very much built around, I think, you know, a few just like key riffs and the vocals. Yeah. And I think that the other thing too that I thought was so cool about it is that I think in the past, Every Time I Die, like, they leaned heavily into like being humorous and stuff, but being able to like strip all that way and still like be like show up and have a strong performance, to me, really, like, that was kind of the wow moment where I was like, wow, these guys really did grow up. And for a band that, like, fuck, I'd been listening to since I was in high school and now I'm 38. You know, it was like one of those things that was like, wow, this is so cool. I like grew up with this band and I've like seen them change, you know? And I think it's one of those things that, like, you know, as a musician myself, allows you to feel like, why like confine yourself to a single style, you know? Why like hold it in so tight there? Why not, like, it's inspiring to see like bands open up and try new things like that. And the fact that Map Change is now Every Time I Die is like most like played song when they have all these other classics that we all think of. Yeah. It's wild to think that shit, man.
For sure.
I do want to kind of go back to what you said about the hauntingness of this entire album, like how there's a lot of haunted melodies, haunted riffs, stuff like that, like, or haunting, not haunted. It's not a...
this album is cursed.
It's not Haunted Mansion up in this album. But I kind of want to go in my top three tracks here because for my first, no particular order, They're not, no song is more favorite than the other, but my first pick was It Remembers. Mm-hmm. And I know Derek has some thoughts on that. We'll get to that later. but this is the song I'm gonna
tear you apart. No,
yeah, no, but
you
that
fucking idiot.
that opening riff and like this song period is what I think of when I think of this album. Like, if someone says Low Teens, that riff plays immediately in my head.
That makes sense.
And it's a little bit of a slower energy on that song, but still really, really heavy. And the chorus has very haunting vocals the first time around, with Brendan Urie doing the backups over top of Keith Buckley singing. Mm-hmm. And not to mention Keith Buckley just going like completely clean vocals the entire time, because I don't think that's ever happened on any of his songs before that.
Oh, yeah, I can't think of
it. I don't think there was anything on Big Dirty or
Fully.
Or New Junk. Yeah.
Yeah.
There's always like a singing, like a talking part or a screaming part at least mixed in.
Right.
Yeah. So this song, fully clean vocals. There's a couple songs on this album that also have that. So it's not an anomaly, but I remember hearing this song first and be like, oh my God, is this a fully clean Every Time I Die song? Mm-hmm. And wow. I think they did it right. I think like this one, if you were going to do it, they did it right.
I agree.
But Brendan Urie, can we talk about that? How do those guys even hook up? I don't even get it.
I don't know. Yeah. But like, it is kind of dope. Like, Brendan Urie really, like, he dials into, I think, like, of the mood and the feel of this song. And, you know, let's be real. Like, you know, Panic at the Disco, very different to what Every Time I Die is doing. But, like, I thought he delivered it very well. And, like, you know, I feel like his vocals play very well with what Keith is doing as well. And it does make up, from a vocal standpoint, definitely a very coherent, amazing track to listen to.
Speaking of which, did you hear that they broke up?
Panic at the Disco?
Yeah.
Yeah,
so
I
they're
did.
Done. But who is he telling that to? He's the only member of the band. Nobody else is left. He's like, he basically wrote a note to himself saying, we're breaking up. Okay.
We're done.
Okay, Brendan.
I'm sick of your shit, guys.
No, sorry. You know what? I wake up every morning. I got to deal with you at band practice. He's looking in the mirror.
Dear Brendan.
Dear Brendan.
I've quit the band from Brendan.
I'm going solo. Love, Brendan. He has probably the best vocal line of that entire song, though. When on the second chorus, where it's like the variation, like riff, and like, which is a totally Every Time I Die thing to do. They basically use the same riff, but it's just variations of it, like same key, same everything. And it snuck up like a desert wind, and then just like the, you know, guitar and drum like riffs on top of that, for the second half, is so dope. And the whole song itself is just amazing and super catchy. I don't know. There's not really much more to say about that song other than it's just personally one of my favorites. I wouldn't say an underrated song, but it's, you know, it's definitely up there for me in terms of favorite songs on the album.
Well, yeah, and then like when Brendan does hit like those high notes that you were talking, like the Desert Wind verse, like it does have that hauntingness to it, the melody that he's singing, right? It does kind of have that, like it kind of drops. Like the notes kind of drop as he's singing it. So it does have that like hauntingness to it, which is very cool.
My second choice is Matt's poster on the wall there. The Coin Has a Say.
So, oh my God.
And it's what a dope song. And it's funny that you said that you're like, that song was like a later listen for you, because that song was the day they made the announcement for that album. They released that song as a single.
Right,
so it was actually the first song that I heard from this entire album, and just super, super heavy. And I remember the video they did live clips of them playing, and they dispersed it in over top of the song. But this song slaps. Just straight up, it slaps. Super high energy. Just really gets me really hyped, just like straight off the bat. You know, I feel all right, but you know, just like right screaming, and just that cool riff. Keith Buckley just hitting those massive, like extended mid screams. He sounds like he's dying. Like he literally sounds like he's struggling to hit them, but it's such a cool, like, I don't know. Like, it's not, he's not the only person to do that. He's not the only person who screams to do that, but it's something about that song. It's really just so prevalent on that album, like where you just hear him hit like those extended screams. And it's like, is he all right? Is he doing okay? Like, you know what I mean? There's so much pain behind it. Like, it's, I don't know. It's very, again, haunting. I'm just going to title this episode Haunted.
All right.
This episode is haunted.
The whole thing with this album, right? Like, if you're looking at it from a vocal standpoint and the lyrics and the context and everything, it really is like Keith, like, you know, trying to like portray like a certain message of what he's dealing with. And I think that's what makes this like that. It's so poetic. Like, when you read the lyrics for each one of these songs, you go from top to bottom. It's a very poetic, you know, kind of message that Keith is trying to put out there. And there's a lot of things, there's a lot of things he's talking about in a lot of this. So a lot of it has to do with the, like, you know, complications of his daughter's birth and you know, the issues of, you know, trying to figure that out as it was happening. And then him, like, realizing that, you know, he's going to be a father, so he needs to, like, introduce sobriety into his life, and really kind of going through the process of, you know, kind of shifting gears and dealing with, like, you know, complications of life and just working out the human psyche to deal with these, like, really large problems that people deal with on an individual basis, trying to learn more about themselves, but also trying to, like, worry about others in a family for people that they love and care about.
Yeah.
And he really just, like, he really goes into those dark, and explains it so well, those dark, like, things that come out of that as a result, right? And that's what I think he's saying in the whole coin has to say. I'd have to like read the lyrics again, but again, trying to introduce sobriety into your life, getting out of the norm that you've dealt with your whole life, or realizing that, like, you know, having vices like, you know, alcohol abuse or something like that was basically just like a vice grip on you and in your social settings and who you interacted with and stuff like that, and how it completely changes your perspective when you get out of that scenario. And then, yeah, like, you know, trying to figure out how to be a father and stuff like that. It's very intense topics get talked about in this album. It's very heavy. It's very heavy.
You can just feel it. Like we mentioned earlier, when you first start listening to it, there's something about that first riff and just in the album that you're like, this is not like the Every Time I Die album of the old, right? This is something different, you know? And I think also, like, dude, like, is there literally a better lyricist than Keith Buckley in the fucking metal scene? Because I cannot think of one. Mostly when I think of metal lyrics, I think of, like...
He's very good.
He's very, very good. I don't... Like,
what
there's
Dave
there's,
Mustaine?
Watch oh, yeah, that's
become
true.
Become a god.
Fuck.
Sorry, I've been holding on to that impression all week.
I mean, I'm more of a Ronnie James Dio fan myself.
Okay.
Yeah, ride the tires. You can see his stripes, but you know he's clean.
Wait a minute.
Uh-oh. I think I just opened Holy Diver for him. Unlocked a memory.
Yeah.
Yeah, no, I think he is such... like an amazing writer, and that's the thing, right? Like, I feel like he's writing more than just lyrics. He's writing poetry in this album, which is, you know, really, really, it's very awesome to kind of read and understand that there's a theme that's playing there, and there's, like, you know, there is a story behind the lyrics that he's delivering in each one of these songs, which is you know, it's great. It really creates a deeper connection, because
for sure
there's, like, you know, when you write songs about raw and partying and having a good time and stuff, it's great, but it's almost kind of, it's a little shallow in the way that it connects, because you're just in there for the moment and it's great and stuff like that. But because these lyrics are so heavy, the context is just so heavy, it kind of, it sticks with you.
Yeah. And he doesn't really fall into the usual cliches that you see in, like, metal and hardcore, you know, like I guess metal being like about, like, I don't know, what, war and dark stuff, you know? I mean, he's talking...
Satan.
Yeah, exactly. Satan, and, you know, and hardcore is about, you know, like, I don't know, staying your principles or whatever. But, like, but in a way that's, a little bit, like, watered down and silly, you know? Like, he really, like, has this way of writing that, yeah, that draws off of, like, you know, like, cultural myths and stuff in the Western world. And, I mean, he's also, what, isn't he, like, a... Doesn't he have a master's degree in English literature?
Probably, I don't know.
Something like that.
I thought he's a very smart man.
Like,
Yeah. And so that's the one thing that I always really appreciated him, is that when you're reading his lyrics, you can feel that there's, like, you know, yeah, that he's drawing off of, like, you know, something a lot deeper, you know? And I appreciate that, just as someone who, I guess, has, like, a bit of an English background too, that I'm not reading lyrics that are kind of silly, that kind of make me laugh. When his lyrics make me laugh, they make me laugh, and not like I'm laughing at them. I'm just like, oh, wow, that's so funny, or that's so clever, like, you know, with, like, the New Black and stuff. But yeah, no, it's just like, I really have always appreciated that about Every Time I Die, is that there's a real craftsmanship behind the lyrics, and this album especially, you know.
Yeah.
And I think, like, that's the thing with, like, well, with what you were mentioning, is that, well, especially Map Change, you know, the depth that he is drawing off of. And that was something that you mentioned as well.
Yeah.
You can hear it in his delivery, but you can also see it in the lyrics. You know, there's something pained coming out of there, right? And it's real and it's raw.
Yeah, I could definitely see. I could see the whole album is kind of like his Christopher Nolan Batman trilogy.
It's
dark and gritty. Why don't we switch gears and get out of the depressing shit for a minute here? And let's talk about my third track, because my third track is I Didn't Want to Join Your Stupid Cult Anyways. And I think that is just because that song is just pure hardcore, super fast, great energy. I think it's more just like a fun hardcore song, really.
Yeah.
And it kind of lifts up. It's in a weird spot because it's in between I think Pedal and something else. I think, or it's After It Remembers, and then like Religion of Speed. So it's like in a weird spot between two really serious songs, but it's just a nice breakup for the entire album. And the main riff is just super catchy. The more they use it, they tack on variations to lead it into the next time they use it, which is kind of cool. But that's also, you know, typical Every Time I Die. They always vary the riff. It's always the same riff, but a little different every time. Mm-hmm. And they use the different time signatures to break it up in between them. Like there's like a lot of the, like, you know, just riding on the same note, but it's in 7/4 instead of 4/4. Mm-hmm. Not to mention a little cheeky breakdown and a build-up part right in the middle of a song. Just a little cheeky breakdown for you.
Yeah, fuck yeah.
Their composition is absolutely insane in this album. Like, you hear it, it's so tight-knit. And like when you hear how much is going on in each song, it's like, how did you come up with that, like that many parts for all these different songs? It's insane.
Well, not to mention in that song, Andy Williams showing off a little bit of shred right at the end there. Just shredding. And it's like, I don't know. I think this was a song like, you know, you have to always like do one for them, do one for yourself. This is definitely a do one for them. Just, there you go. Throw a fun one on the album. You know what I mean? But I enjoy that song a lot. Like, it still gets me hype. I was listening to it this morning before I drove down here.
Sick.
Yeah, no, just definitely rounds out my picks, I think. But it's definitely one of my favorites for sure. Maddie, what do you got for your top three?
Oh, shit. Okay. Try not to do an overlap here, but I know we're probably going to overlap.
Maybe.
It's all good. We did overlap too on the first two episodes So no worries. People, it's bound to happen because you're talking about your favorite three tracks. A lot of people have similar
tastes. Just means we all have great taste.
Exactly. Yeah. It means that I don't have to like bore anyone with my blather about it anymore. Okay. The first track I've already mentioned, It Remembers. And, you know, it's like, you know, because it's just got that like, you know, that bluesy southern vibe to it. Like, and I didn't even get a chance to talk about like all the vocals, right? Which I think we went kind of nuts on. So I don't need to cover that. And I think the other thing too is it's just like it would just came so far out of left field when I heard it. And I think the other thing that I thought was cool about it is it like for as a just in terms of its pure inspirational value on me at the time being like a songwriter. It made me go, oh, fuck, you can do this on a hardcore album and it can be awesome.
Yeah.
So that was the other thing, you know. And I think that also, too, I like finally allowed myself to like open up and experiment more with like bluesy styled guitar parts, you know. And it was and I had so much fun doing that I was like, fuck, why did it take this?
Why did it take so long?
why was I so embarrassed about this, you know? So there's that. And then, you know, obviously The Coin Has a Say is definitely got to be one of my faves, you know. Like you said, you know, I think the other thing too, when I first heard that song, I was like, okay, this is like more the Every Time I Die like I know and love. You know, and just so fucking catchy, especially that guitar riff. Like, what I think is the chorus, the
staring at the road ahead.
Yeah, it's so good, man. It's so good. And here's the other thing. And I'm gonna get dark again. Does it actually like draw off of like any of the themes of No Country for Old Men at all, which is a outstanding Western movie, one of my faves.
That's exactly what it's from.
That's what I thought. Because
he's holding the
call it in the air,
the pressure heads. Gun thing. That he had,
the cattle killer.
But The Coin Has a Say is like one of the famous lines from that movie.
Because when he goes into the gas station.
Yeah, he goes into the gas station and he's like,
how much have you lost on a coin toss?
Yeah, he's like, the coin don't have no say, sir. And he's like, the coin has a say. And it's like, holy shit. Yeah. And that's one of the classic scenes in that movie. Yeah. But it's so interesting, like what, like the bigger, like, I guess, like philosophical relevance of that scene, right?
Yeah.
But so I thought that was really cool, you know, because obviously I'm a big fan of that movie and the Coen brothers and, you know, and all that sort of thing, which I won't go too much into because I don't want to like get too self-indulgent. But then there's Map Change, which we have talked about a lot.
Beautiful song.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I mean,
what more needs to be said?
Yeah, what more needs to be said than what we've already said? It's fucking great, and it's a classic.
You need to make like the picture title for this episode, Maddie's poster.
Maddie's poster?
Yes.
There might be an infringement problem with that, but yeah, sure.
Just
might be a
flip
copyright
it.
Issue.
Just take a photo of it.
Do a horizontal flip of it.
Yeah. I'll literally post on Instagram today. That's what I'll do. I'll take a picture and post on Instagram and be like, this is what we're talking about.
Yeah, man.
Take a picture of us in front of it. So, you know, it's just our ugly mugs.
Thumbs up in front of it.
Yeah, yeah, man. That's how much that fucking, like, that song means to me. I got a poster up on my fucking wall for it. So, there you go.
This episode was meant to be, boys.
Yeah, man.
Derek, what do you got for your top three tracks?
So... And this whole album's just like, it's full of bangers, right? Yeah. Like, let's be honest, I can listen to this album from start to finish and have a great time. So it really is hard to dial into three, but I would say for number three, I'm going to go with Glitches.
Okay.
Nice. I really love the riff of Glitches and like how Fear and Trembling kind of starts slow and kind of muddy and, you know, but then like Glitches just goes really into that like groovy, just like hardcore and like we're up and going, you know? So I feel like it really sets the tone well and transitions very well into the whole album and the whole experience of listening to the album. And this was something I was saying before. I feel like Every Time I Die is so good at matching like tracks or figuring out their track list and putting the right songs beside each other. And I think those two do it. So going into Glitches, I like it more than Fear and Traveling. So that's definitely my number three. Number two, The Coin Has a Say. That song is so good.
Yeah.
And again, it has that driving rhythm, that driving riff, just everything about it. So cohesive. So Every Time I Die and just hard and heavy. And it just makes you want to break stuff. It's awesome. Did you do a Limp Bizkit episode?
I literally did. It came out right as I got here. Well, you know what? We did Chocolate Starfish and the Hot Dog Flavored Water. I know it's not the best Limp Bizkit album, but
no, but it's the one you talk about.
It is the one you talk about.
Dude, Hot Dog was such a good song.
You want to know why? Because we had the guys that I had on. I had Matt Roberts like from AWTF, and I also had Cole Hardy of Nightwell. I don't know if you know that band.
Yeah, I know that band.
Yeah, you know that band. Yeah, so their lead guitar player is Matt's cousin.
Oh, okay.
So he's a good friend of mine. And I had them on, and we kind of decided on that album because we wanted to talk about WrestleMania X7.
Okay.
Because the song My Way was used in it was Stone Cold and The Rock face each other at WrestleMania X7. And it was like, there's a big video package with My Way put over top of it. And not to mention, I always forget about this, but The Undertaker used to come out to Roland before he came out to American Badass.
Oh my God.
When he was doing his whole blue collar American, I drive a motorbike and I wear a bandana. He was like, you know, all American Undertaker, whatever the hell they call him. I forget what the name is they had for him. But he used to come out to Roland. I forgot about that.
Oh my God.
So that was around the same time. WrestleMania X7, also considered probably one of the best WrestleManias of all time.
Down.
Yeah. Come on.
What you gonna do now?
That was literally the number one. Like the number one online, the number one criticism they had about that album was Fred Durst's voice. People did not like Fred Durst's voice on that album. They hated it. I didn't really find it any different than Significant Other. I thought he was still kind of, you know, the same dude on that album. But
were those people who are just kind of discovering Limp Bizkit?
Maybe, because they don't forget too, that album came out. I'm going into Limp Bizkit now. But that album came out right after Woodstock 99.
True, right.
Literally, Woodstock 99 happened in August, and that album came out in early 2000.
Right.
So like it was, and I think they were even played. I think they played Roland at Woodstock 99, or they were just writing the songs at the time of Woodstock 99. So they're fresh already off in the public image as shitheads.
Yeah. You know?
And then this album comes out and most people will point to that. I think it's the fall of Limp Bizkit.
Well, weren't they not the key turning point at Woodstock 99 for it to turn? Like, obviously they were like all these like small things leading it for it to be chaos.
I don't know, maybe.
But then Limp Bizkit went in and it was just like, boom, riot. Yep.
Korn was pretty bad too. I'll tell you right now. Like,
but Korn, it was break stuff that like really made people go nuts.
Yeah, but
right?
Like Korn came on before them, and I think Korn like started it off, and then they pushed it, and then Red Hot Chili Peppers and handing out candles was probably not a smart idea, because then they started playing Fire from Jimi Hendrix and people started burning shit to the ground.
It's like, it's like giving a pyromaniac a blowtorch.
Because literally Anthony Kiedis is or not Anthony Kiedis, literally Flea's out there butt naked playing bass.
Oh yeah.
Like, you know what I mean?
Fucking love Flea.
Dick hanging out.
Yeah. But, you know, the one thing you got to give Limp Bizkit is that the music is good. Like, Wes Borland is a very good writer.
That was most of what we talked about. I'll tell you.
Okay, there you go.
So just in case you missed the last album, the last episode, you just got a full recap from Matty and Derek.
Oh man,
no worries.
But
we could summarize that in 5 seconds.
Fuck yeah.
Oh man.
All right. So I'll go back into my number one. So my number one. How did we go from Every Time I Die to Limp Bizkit? It just happened. Yeah. Right?
Come on.
So my number one, definitely has to be Pedal.
Yep.
Pedal, and it's the song Just Before the Coin Has to Save. So first off, I feel like those two songs together just work so well. The transition from Pedal to The Coin Has to Say is such a great choice in terms of like listing the tracks. But the thing about Pedal is it's the one song in that whole album where I actually feel anxiety. Because you hear it in the lyrics, you hear it in the music. It's just so chaotic, right? And it almost sounds like he's given up at that point. So again, with understanding the theme that he was like really worried because there was complications with his daughter's birth and his girlfriend, like in those lyrics, he's just like, everything turns black, like everything's black. And it's just so dark, right? Yeah. It's basically you're almost looking at a human being that's just kind of lost all hope, and it's a hopeless song. Like, that's what it feels like. And when I hear that song, like, we talk about The Haunting, but that's the one song where I truly feel like even me as a listener is kind of just like anxious and worried and scared. It invokes all those emotions that I think he's trying to portray, or at least what he was going through when writing the lyrics to that song. And you know, with all the instruments that's happening at the same time, very driving, very like, I don't know what kind of chords you would call those, but it's just like those like hardcore, like
it's a lot of just like the dissonant chords. Like I always equate them to, I call them the Fall of Troy chords, because there's like a million Fall of Troy songs that have those exact same chords, but they're essentially just like augmented, I guess, or diminished chords, like where they add in like instead of the bar chord being like a fourth or a fifth or whatever, instead it goes to like a fifth flat. It's very hard to explain, but it, like, you know it if you played it. Like, as soon as someone played it, be like, oh yeah, I know exactly what you're talking about.
Yeah,
because it's in a lot of hardcore songs.
Very much so. Yeah. And it has that like an emergency sound to it, right? Yeah. There's just this weird sort of like panic I feel when I listen to that song. So I have to put it at the number one, because it really just, it makes me feel something, which is insane. And, you know, that doesn't necessarily make it sound like it's a good listening experience, but it's so powerful. And and that's why I got to put in my number one spot. Pedal, Every Time I Die, just banger.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Damn. I'm glad you reminded me about Glitches. Can I call that my honorable mentions?
You can. You can absolutely put that in your honorable mentions.
I love that song.
You know what? It actually goes well into our next segment.
Okay.
So our next segment is the most overrated song on the album, the most underrated song on the album, and it's called Over Under. So for Over Under this week, I picked... I don't know. This is one of those albums where I don't think a song is overrated on it, in my personal opinion.
Agree.
So it's a little harder to pick. Like, the last episode I did was Chocolate Starfish. There's definitely a lot of overrated songs on that. Right? So, like,
you don't say.
Yeah. And I kind of have to adopt the same idea, I guess, as I did for my first episode, which was Toxicity, because I don't think there's an overrated song on that album either.
Chop Suey.
Well, see, here's the thing, though. But if you actually listen to Chop Suey, it's a fantastic song.
It is a good song.
There's really, like, so it's not overrated, per se.
I'm just so sick of it.
I know. But that's pretty much
what... It's a song everybody knows.
Yeah, right? It's a song everybody knows. This is kind of the way I was going with it. But this one, I kind of took a different approach. And in terms of overrated, I kind of chose just my least favorite song on the album, really. So for me, my least favorite song on the album was C++, Love Will Get Me Killed.
Oh, interesting. Okay.
So, and I'll tell you why. I don't know if it's necessarily overrated, because it's really not. It has more of a rock vibe compared to some of the other songs on the album. It's very rock heavy. Not in a good way, in my opinion. I think just the riffs, like, really aren't my favorite. And the singing, I don't think, pairs well with them. Like, I don't know what it is. It's just something about that song is like, it seems like a little grating to me. Like, I just don't like it.
Yeah.
Like the heavy sound of the verses and choruses, I think that style of singing doesn't work for that. Just in my personal opinion.
I'd have to, now, like, C++ isn't a song that I like listen to like all the time. Like, I gotta kind of listen back. But for me, all I remember from that song is like, it's very tight. Very tight played song.
It is.
But I'd have to listen to it again to hear what you're saying about the vocals, because it's not a song that I frequent all the time, but yeah.
Also it does come after my underrated pick on the album, which Derek already touched on, which is Glitches. And I think it's more about going from Glitches into that song. I get what they were trying to do and kind of put it into a contrast, but I think it was the wrong time to contrast. Just in my personal opinion. What do I know? I don't have a platinum record like these guys. So, like, I'm really just talking out my ass at this point. But Glitches, to me, is the most underrated song on the album, only because this song is just super moshy, and, like, something about mosh, like, just mosh songs get me, like, so hyped up. And, like, I was, what you call it? It makes me want to break everything, like, in your house right now, Matt. I'm just going to tell you right now. Do not play that song, because I'm just going to start tipping over.
He's going to start glitching
dressers, everything, right?
So, bad time to do interior decorating.
Yeah, exactly. But the bass drum on that song just punches right through the mix. It makes it sound, like, so amazing. It just drives the whole song. So many cool, like, halftime parts back into double time, like, and the breakdown to end the song is just so nasty. Just so absolutely nasty. Like the guitar riff by itself, like with like the lo-fi, and then right back into the full band and vocals. And they have like, I love the idea of like the breakdown riff using the drums to differentiate it, like just to extend it. So they play it four bars with syncopated, like, I guess not syncopated. It's more synced up with the guitar and the bass line. And then he just kind of does like a halftime feel on it for the second time around. And that, like, it's almost like a completely different riff. So they kind of use the drums to like propel the song. I really like that. It's definitely a cool mix on it. Right. Like, not to mention the song just kicks ass. Honestly, the song just kicks ass. It's a great song.
It just has the right energy.
It does. Yep.
From
it really
start
does.
To finish, and really just rolls so good. And as a second song, like in the full album, it's such a good way to get you hooked.
Yeah, I agree. But Derek, what do you got for Over Under?
So, okay. And here it comes, here folks. It comes. What we've been leading up to this whole time. Yeah. I think the most overrated song is It Remembers. And I'll explain why. When you listen to the whole album, again, my whole approach to Low Teens is like, you got to listen to it as a whole. There, like, yes, there are songs that you will like. Yes, there are like bits and pieces you can take, which a lot of records play that way. But Low Teens is definitely an experience that needs to be taken from start to finish. And It Remembers, I feel, at least personally, is the only song that disconnects from the entirety of the album itself. It's a great track, and it's iconic. Like, people know that song. You hear it, you know it. It's got Brandon Urie in it. Yep. He does a really great job. Like, there's nothing about this song that I actually hate. Like, I don't hate this song, but it does have that disconnect to what I think the whole song is. And like, almost like it's like that radio song that is a part of the album, right?
Yeah.
Which I don't know if it ended up being or not, but you know, it's my Over for me. But still a great track.
And
if I had, you know what I mean? Like, I'm not throwing shade on it. It's not a bad song by any means. I actually really like it. But it is the song that, for me, kind of just disconnects from the whole album.
I'm so hurt.
So with that said, well,
I'm so hurt right now.
So when I came up with this segment, like originally when I was coming up with the idea for the show and I came up with this segment, I didn't realize how hard it was going to be to pick an overrated song on albums that I love. Like, you know what I mean? It becomes a lot harder when you actually like the album. It's like It Remembers, I get it. It's more geared towards like a popular audience. Like that's the song they wanted to be. That's the song they wanted Map Change to be. But guess what? The population decided and it's Map Change. Let me, you know what I mean?
So, fucking right.
Yes.
You know, it's kind of funny when you think about an overrated song on an album, right? Like it's kind of hard because maybe it was a song that like inspired you to get into music or something like that, yeah. Right? And even though it is the song that like everybody knows, it's, you know, it still has a really big part. Like you were even talking about Chop Suey, right? Like, yep. Is it an overrated song? In a lot of ways, yes, right? But it's still pretty, well, dude, it's still a good song.
I agree with you.
So it's hard to call a song overrated.
It's not necessarily overrated. I would more consider that song to be overplayed.
It's overplayed.
Yeah. Which. I can get behind. I can 100% agree with that.
Yeah. I was just being an asshole because I'm just so tired of it. If I never heard that song ever again in a public setting,
yeah.
I think I'd be a little bit happier.
Well, wait till you come on my next episode of Toxicity Part 2.
Until we go out for like karaoke tonight and I sing it right in your face.
You mean we're not going to sing Cyndi Lauper?
We could throw that in there. You promised.
My underrated song is Skin Without Bones.
Yeah, that's a good track.
And the reason why I love it is because I feel like it kind of drives back into that like fun, playful... this of like what every time I die because how does the song start from a vocal standpoint? It's like I got a voodoo doll. I just love how it kind of jives into that. Like when I first hear it, and again, like, you know, taking low teens for what it is, I hear that song, I'm just like, oh, okay, that's a bit of a disconnect too, but I get into it and I have a lot of fun with it.
Yeah,
and so, you know, just a fun song to listen to, you know, on the album. Again, a lot of darkness in this one, so that one for me kind of takes me out a little bit. And yeah. I enjoy it. Even though like it is still dark in its own retrospect.
A bit more of a palate cleanser.
Yeah.
There you go.
It's a fun one. For me, personally, it's a fun one.
Okay.
I get what you're saying. Yeah. Maddie, what do you got?
I'm going to keep mine real brief because you guys covered most of what I had to say. So I would agree. I have a hard time choosing an over. I don't think there's actually any overs in this album.
No.
But if I'm compelled to choose, I would agree with you. It is C++. Because for whatever reason, like when I hear that one, I'm like, this is a little, there's just something that I'm like, huh, okay.
Yeah.
But not a bad song.
No, it's not a bad song. And that's the thing. It's something about those, like, it's literally because the rest of the song I actually enjoy. Like, the second half of the song I enjoy. Yep. It's that first little bit. It's the vocals on top of that riff. Something to me just doesn't click.
Yeah, and it's
like,
just,
it's definitely a skip for me.
Exactly.
Like, if it comes on, just, okay, next
But
song.
It's weird because I think if it was placed lower down in the album, I don't think it would be as weird. But because it's, like, what, the third song?
Yeah, it's the third song.
I'm just like, huh?
And it's right after Glitches.
Yeah. It's confusing because Glitches is so, like, it's, like, all right, and then it goes to that, and you're like, wait a minute, what the hell? Yeah. And now, cool, there's a cool thing, there is something to be said about that. They're throwing you a fucking curveball a little bit, anyways. That's my over. My under is Pedal, because that line, I remember when he starts screaming that line,
yeah,
what is it, the one with the
like ripped something early
from this world.
I was born again as a girl. It's really good. And he just keeps chanting it.
Yeah, I didn't actually know what that was about when I first heard it. I thought he was like making a comment on some gender orientation stuff.
Uh-huh.
But it's just he keeps screaming it. I think as soon as I heard that, I was like, wow, that the song went from really good to like just something that I remembered, you know. Yeah. And I love that. And so that would be my underrated because I just, it's a fucking awesome track. Boy. Yeah, there you go, bud. Yeah. Got you.
Listen to Pedal. Pedal is just an insane ride.
Yeah.
Agreed.
Yeah.
Agreed.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Pedal to the metal, baby. Let's go.
Oh, man. No, Fuck, sorry. My brain.
Give me fuel. Nope. Give me fire. Give me that.
That's what I'm saying. I was thinking about Fuel by Metallica as soon as I said that.
Do we have another segment coming up, or what's the deal?
I think we're wrapping up. We're in the final thoughts.
I think we're in the final thoughts here.
Yeah, so let's just throw it over to the last segment, which is final thoughts.
Final toast. I'll start this one off. So honestly, like, Low Teens is such an awesome journey that, you know, you got to take the time. Like, when you have a chance to listen to this album, say you got like a road trip coming up or something like that, or, you know, you just got like an hour that you can kind of sit down, definitely experience it from top to bottom. Enjoy it. It's a very interesting, you know, look into, you know, human psyche and, you know, issues that people deal with from an individual introspective standpoint, with just amazing composition. Like, if you're like, you know, a heavy metal fan or a hardcore fan or something like that, like, you're gonna enjoy this record. Yeah. It's very enjoyable to listen to, and you know, you kind of come out of it with an introspective kind of mentality, and you think about it, and you know, it's an enjoyable listen. So check it out.
Yeah. Oh, it's me now. My final thoughts.
Cue in the closing music.
And cue in the closing music.
Marijuana affects the memory. I haven't smoked weed in, well, a while. So, no excuse here. My final thoughts on the album? I actually don't know if it's my favorite album anymore.
Really?
Yeah. Because I think Radical is just so good.
That was one we were discussing about doing, but I think we could all agree on Low Teens.
I haven't listened to it. Well, I know there's what was that one song, the pizza one?
The pizza. You know, the one about pizza.
Is that what it's called?
Speaking of which, you guys want to order a pizza?
it's the newest album, right?
If you listen to a song called Desperate Pleasures off that, I think that's to me where you start. Because it's like a bit of a, it's great. But as for this album, for Low Teens, it's definitely, I think it marks, was it before or after what's the album that has the red cover on it? It came after that one, right?
Yes.
Okay. So I don't know.
It came right after the Big Dirty.
It came after the Big Dirty?
Yeah, it's 2016. Big Dirty's 2012.
Oh, wait, okay.
The red one? Which one are you talking about?
From Parts Unknown.
From Parts Unknown?
Yeah, like, I feel like From Parts Unknown is probably when they start to make that, like, departure from the silliness and the sort of the jokiness to becoming a little more serious. Because I remember Keith saying that the writing of that album was tough. But I could be wrong. I might have been high when I read that. but Low Teens almost seems like when they finally took that big turn and it became mature.
Yeah.
And that like shift and change in their style in terms of the tone really like grew into its full maturity. So for me, that's why this album is special, I think.
Fair enough. I mean, I kind of touched already, like, on my final thoughts right off the bat. Didn't know I was burning through that. But
oh, boy.
But honestly, like, this album, like, a lot of the songs on it, I could consider in my top 10 Every Time I Die songs. Like I said, definitely not a platinum album for me, like, no skips, and it's not one I can listen to start to finish, unlike Gutter Phenomenon, which I can. This would be more consider... like a gold album, I guess. So, cause there's a lot of like just serious hits on this album and like songs that I will put in heavy rotation a lot. Like, not to mention it has that good mix of them trying to branch out into like a newer sort of style, like a song like Religion of Speed, like that intro guitar riff. Mm-hmm. That sounds like Question by System of a Down, you know what I mean? But but that's like, when would you ever hear that on any of their earlier albums? You know what
True.
I mean? Like while like, you know, Hot Damn or Last Night in Town are like definitely like, you know, up there with my favorites. I think I kind of agree with you, Matt, where it's like, this is a more, it's like they've kind of matured, and like you can tell it's a little different. Like, when, how old were they when Last Night in Town came out? 18, 19, maybe?
Yeah, it was 2001, I think.
Yeah, so yeah, they were like 19. So what, by that time, they're, you know, 38, 39, right?
Oh,
you
know, yeah,
like,
yeah.
So you can definitely tell this has like a little bit more mature themes, you know, not rated for E for everyone.
Yeah.
But still a fantastic album, and still a lot of hits on it. It's always going to hold a special place in my heart, like I said earlier, because this is what kind of got me back in to Every Time I Die, like, and definitely made me go back and listen to, like, because I never really listened to, like, New Junk Aesthetic or, like, The Big Dirty. I never really listened to those when they came out.
But once I listened to that, I'm like, New Junk Aesthetic, actually.
Yeah, it's a good album. Good. Like, I, now that I've gone back
and listened
to it.
White Smoke, again, it's like that, like, two-song combination. It's so good.
Big Dirty, for me, is, like, one of the seminal albums, even though Last Night in Town is what got me into them.
That's what I mean.
And I was always considered like an old fan, like, because I was probably four or five years younger than them.
Yeah.
When that came out. Yeah. But the Big Dirty came out. It kind of like signaled a bit of a shift in their styles, a little more rock and roll.
Yeah.
But yeah, it's great. It's a good album.
Agreed. Why don't we roll into our thank yous and plugs, gentlemen? I feel like we've been going for a while here. Derek, you got anything you want
to
plug?
So much to say. No, like, you know, thank you, Eric, for inviting me. This has been really cool. It's my first, like, podcast experience, so...
Except for the Chevy's podcast, which really wasn't a podcast.
Count? Those were like just us hanging out on a Friday during COVID. We didn't know what to do.
Yeah, exactly.
Like, all right, let's just like talk about things. Yeah.
Smoking
but
beans, baby.
Smoking?
Yeah, no, I just like, you know, well, thank God.
What?
You know, I want to thank my bandmates, like Matt, you know, thank you. You're a beautiful person, beautiful soul, right? Yeah. And thank you for taking the time to listen to my ass talk for an hour and a half.
Hey, this is what I do, my guy.
Yeah.
Thank you, Eric. This is awesome.
Yeah, I just want to say thank you. I don't really have anyone else to thank. I'm just going to thank you, Eric, because you like work like crazy and just, you know, get things done. And, you know, you make me feel like, you know, I should be less lazy.
Thanks, guys. I appreciate that. I do appreciate that. I mean, I try to work hard on these shows. But
yeah, man.
No, thank you guys so much for coming on. Like, I couldn't think of a better group to talk about Every Time I Die with than you guys. So,
fuck yeah.
I want to thank people who make pizza.
They're good to thank, too. But
there's a lot of people in this neighborhood.
Call one of them soon.
Clearly,
pizza's on my mind.
But, yeah, if you want, go check out this show on SNME's Podbean. It'll be up every other Saturday, I think. Also, if you're not a Patreon member, subscribe now. What are you doing? It's only $1 a week. You get amazing shows like NXT Talk, BAM Weekly, MLW Rewind, Godfathers of Podcasting. It's all there. By the way, check out the newest episode
for $1?
For $1 a week.
That's a deal.
Yeah, you get like, damn. At this point, we're looking at it. I think it's about 19 shows you get. Go check out the newest episode of Godfathers of Podcasting. They had Larry Hankin on last night. I don't know if you know who that is. He's like, he's pretty much that guy in every single show or movie you've ever seen. He was in like Billy Madison, Breaking Bad.
Breaking Bad?
I can't remember in Breaking Bad, but in Billy Madison, he's the... I don't know. Look up a picture of him.
Oh, I know. He's the guy that runs the fucking the dump in Breaking Bad.
He
plays Carl in Billy Madison.
Yeah,
very.
He's like,
cool.
Oh, he's like crazy. Carl's got a point there.
Oh man, it was definitely unbelievable. And if you want, go check me out on Twitch, twitch.tv/erke90, where I'll be playing a game that hasn't been popular in 15 years. Hopefully have you guys on maybe on Twitch. Come play some video games with me.
Cool.
That just came out on Xbox, so I've been playing that.
Oh, totally. I fuck up a game of Turtles in Time.
Have you played the new one?
No.
There's a new one called Shredder's Revenge.
Holy
and
fuck.
And it's all 8-bit or 16-bit. We'll have to play that.
Shredder, taste my steel.
Yeah.
Oh, man.
Yeah. I'm in. Let's do it.
Yeah. But I guess until next week. Oh, also, when this podcast comes out, we'll have a song available Probably on New Age Outlaws like page, I guess I'll post it, or I'll post it on the looking back on it pod group or SNME radio or something. But we'll have our very first single come out, Russo.
Woo!
So definitely go check it out and let us know what you think. And especially if you like Every Time I Die, definitely check it out.
You?
Yeah. But until next week or next couple weeks, peace out.
Take care, guys.
Yeah.
Brush your teeth.
Yeah, yeah. Well, I know.